Alan Kalinge with us. We're going to take your phone calls, your stories, your nightmares with student loans next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Alan Kalinge with us. Alan, we're going to get calls and stories in a second. So to play the devil's advocate for a moment, nobody is forcing younger people to go to college. They're not dragging them in, forcing them to take these loans. One could say, hey, you're getting what you pay for. How do you react to that?
Well, you know, again, the way I look at it is this. You know, if you go and you buy a new car, right? You buy it online, let's say, and you show up to the dealership, you hop in your brand new car, and you drive down the road, and you realize that there's no brakes. So you wind up in a ditch down the road. You limp back to the car dealership, and you go, hey, guys, this car has no brakes. What's going on? I just crashed in a ditch. And they tell you, you know, you really should have read the manual, sir. You know, this particular car doesn't come with brakes. Well, you know, is that really your fault?
I mean, well, is it buyer beware?
Well, that's right. Now, I mean,
student beware.
Student beware, sure. But, you know, like I said, students are never made aware that how dangerous student loans are. I mean, completely different from every other loan in our nation's history. They simply had no way of knowing. And, you know, most people I talk to that have run afoul on their student loans and seen that, you know, triple or quadruple or more, they don't have any problems with, you know, repaying what they borrowed. They agree that's, you know, what they would, that's what they intended to do. They never had any bad faith or in entering the contract, et cetera. But the fact is, you know, this is not like other loans. This is something where the incentive is for you to fail, right? You know, the lenders would much rather see your loan go to default so they can either get paid full book value by the federal government and then later follow up and collect on a much larger defaulted loan, if it's a private loan, they can all of a sudden come after your parents. And so a $25,000 loan turns into a $125,000 loan. Well, all of a sudden, mom and dad have to cash in their retirement or get a second mortgage on the house.
Or sell the house.
Or sell the house. You know, this is nobody should have to beware of that sort of a cataclysm awaiting them because it simply shouldn't exist.
Now, what are the odds? What are the odds of all student debt being erased in the next couple of years?
Well,
some gift from God.
That's a great question. At the rate that student loan indebtedness is increasing, I think it's going to be around $2 trillion in about 3 to 4 years. And at some point, you know, the default rate now is, it's always been quite high. Currently, I think it's probably running, and nobody knows, by the way, Department of Education will
they won't release these numbers.
Yeah. But the true default rate is probably around 40%.
Wow, it's astounding.
Even higher at this point. Yeah, it's absolutely astounding. But at some critical point, everybody's going to step back and go, whoa, wait. This is a joke, right? Student loans will lose all legitimacy with the public. And, I mean, that is just an inevitable consequence of an unfettered, unbounded bubble, like as you called it earlier. And at what point that happens? I think we came pretty close when Occupy Wall Street broke out. you know, and the problem has grown far worse, even just in the past 4 or 5 years since that example of public outcry. And so I couldn't put a timetable on it, but if I had to guess, I'd say that probably in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see very large movements towards that end, where everybody will simply stop paying and student loans will be.
I even thought back in 2007, 2008, they were going to remove everybody's mortgage debt and just say, if you have a house, it's yours.
Well, you know, it's interesting. All the money that was thrown at the insurance companies and the banks and
they could have thrown it our way.
They could have paid off every mortgage on every subprime loan in the country and still had, you know, trillions of dollars left over.
Or, you know, as I propose, give everybody a check for $100,000 that, like a voucher, but you could only buy goods and services made in the United States.
You know, think about the economic stimulus that would come along with that. I mean, and similarly with the student loan problem, if $1.5 trillion was injected back into the economy over the space of a year or two, we would be humming better than Germany, better than, you know, the best economies in the world right now. There's no doubt about it.
Let's go to the phones. They're lining up here for you, Alan.
Sure.
Let's pick it up by going to Frank in Arkansas to get started. Frank, welcome to the program.
Good evening, gentlemen. I hope you all are doing good. I lost my job back in 08. I had a real good job. I was building school buses for our nation.
Aha. Okay.
And at that time, it was a large plant. Lost over 1,500 people out of that job and almost shut down the plant. In the state at that time, the governor sat there and had a location plan for people in that position where they could go back to school if they needed to and that, you know, to get into another job and that, which I did. I took up on it and that, and went through workforce, which was part of unemployment and that. So I went through all that. I did a two-year course in 18 months. I acquired like about $25,000 in debt. I spent 2 years sending out at least 25 applications a day.
Wow.
And yeah. And with my background for the other work that I had done and everything, the profession that I was going into and that, current administration and that kind of slammed that industry down.
Did they think you were too qualified for anything?
No. Well, some of them. I was going for any kind of job in that. And at that time, the Fayetteville shale was booming, and that's where I was going into petroleum technology on the production side. So I would have had no problem at all, starting off around $65,000 a year.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
For starting, you know. So I figured that, you know, I could sit there and I'd have it paid off in the first year and that. But, boom, I was still in line collecting unemployment and that. And here I start seeing every other month I'd be going in there and that, and I'm seeing people my age, which I'm 60 now. I was in my mid-50s at the time, seeing people my age in there and that.
Yeah, and it was growing too, wasn't it?
Yeah, and each other month and that. Then I started seeing younger people coming in and that, and I'd be talking to them and that. Then I started seeing people that was in my profession that I got a degree in, showing up in there too, and that I'm going, oh Lord, so I'm going for any kind of job, even flipping burgers. I wasn't old enough to be a greeter at Walmart or anything like that, you know, because they were at that time, it was like 100,000 people losing their jobs across the country.
Oh, yeah. So, as of right now, Frank, what are you doing?
I am disabled. Through the course of going through all of that, it made I had a disability at the time that I was discovered back in 2000.
Oh, God.
And
it just aggravated it.
It started getting worse. Yeah. And then I ended up almost having a heart attack, Matt, which ended up going in and having open heart surgery and kidney surgery on top.
It's not worth losing your life over, is it, Alan? Not worth losing your life at all. Next up, let's go west to Gabrielle in San Diego. Welcome to the program, Gabrielle.
You know what this guy, what's his name again?
My guest?
Mm-hmm.
Alan.
Alan. You know.
Say hi to her, Alan.
Hey, Gabrielle.
There you go.
Hi, Alan. But, Alan, most of the things that you're saying is actually not so, because I consolidated all my bills. And, you know, it's a daunting task, I have to say that. You have to find who your primary loans are, who you borrow the money from, and then you have to send it to the people, you know, that take care of your loans. And I did all that.
What do you mean, though? You had student loans, Gabrielle?
Yes.
How much was it total?
Oh, I have to get mine.
Give me just an idea, just a ballpark.
Quite high, 30,000.
And when you say you consolidated it, what did you do to it?
I found out who the primary loaners were, and the secondary loaners, because they sell you loans. You know that?
Oh, yeah. Of course they do.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's how they make their money.
And so I found all that out, and then they put them all together in a pack, and then I had to ask for a deferment, and they were very nice to me.
But you still owe it, right?
Yes, and I pay on it, but they don't come to your house and put you in handcuff and any of that stuff.
Well, bothered. That's because you kept paying. That's you didn't run away from
it. No, for a time I couldn't do that.
Well, but they had not taken you to court at that time.
No.
See, like this fellow
find out who you loaned the money from.
Yeah, this other guy, apparently they had a court thing and he never knew about it and they came and got him. You were lucky.
But no, I'm not lucky. I think the system worked just fine because people don't want to do that job.
Well, let's get your reaction, Alan. What do you think?
Well, you know, I congratulations for making it through your student loans.
She still owes it. She still owes the debt. It's not like it's gone away, right?
Right. Well, I don't know if she's repaid her debt in full or not.
No, she's making payments, I take it.
Oh, okay. Well, I would say be very wary and be very cognizant of the fact that defaults can make far more money for the lenders than if they remain in good stead. And also, Gabriel, you know, if you have any health emergencies, for example, if you get in a car accident or any number of things happen to you that, you know, if you lose a job, et cetera, you need to be aware that bankruptcy protections are not there for you on these student loans. And while you've apparently been, you know, lucky to this point and good for you, that still doesn't obviate the need to give the same sort of protections to borrowers of student loans to borrowers of every other sort of loan. I mean, you know, God forbid if something horrible was to happen in your life, would you want to see your $30,000 student loans explode to $100,000 and, you know, maybe you end up getting your Social Security garnished? Or, in fact, you may very well end up in handcuffs and on the way to jail based on what we've seen here in Texas. So, I mean, I think it's just important that you don't impart your own experiences.
So, see, she doesn't know the total amount when I asked her, but the big question, too, is if it was 30, let's make sure it's not 50 when they restructured it, right?
Well, that's a great point. You know, with every consolidation, new guarantor fees, new origination fees, there's a ton of fees that get thrown onto the debt, as well as the interest becoming capitalized into the principal. And so there's a million ways for the debt to grow. And I mean, it sounds like she's got a handle on it, and good for her. But the point remains that this is a systemically predatory lending instrument, and everybody, even who have loans in good stead, are on very thin ice, and they need to be very careful.
Next up, Gabrielle, thank you for your call. Good luck to you. Let's go to George in Martinez, California, on the wild card line. Hello there, George.
Hello, this is the guy from Pittsburgh, and I got a Kafka story for you. I don't exist in the federal government.
Why not?
I called the Department of Education because Ed Fund here in California says I owe a student loan that started out for $2,000 in 1984. The bank I took the loan out went bankrupt. Then I had to get any mail for 10 years on the loan. And it goes from collection agency to collection. They add their fees and interest. It's now $11,000.
Oh, my God.
The Department of Education gave my name, Social Security number, my address, said I'd like to send in my medical paperwork because I can no longer work. And they said, you're not in our system. You don't have a loan. And yet the state of California says you have a loan.
You have one.
How do you prove that you have a loan when the federal government says you don't exist?
Jeez, what's he do, Alan?
You know, that's Ed Fund raises the alarm bells with me, by the way. Ed Fund is notorious for coming after borrowers for huge amounts of money, far more than they ever incurred, and losing paperwork and financial mismanagement. In fact, the state of California sold Ed Fund off. It was actually, I believe their portfolio was purchased by an East Coast lending company. So Ed Fund's just a disaster, and I empathize with your plight, but I mean, all I can tell you, George, is you're not alone. And I can give you the full numbers because they aren't public. But Ed Fund is a disaster.
It's amazing, though, how it grew from $2,000 to $11,000. And George, how you doing on your YouTube channel? Give everybody your YouTube address.
Mac is down for now because of a fan. I did some videos, but, you know, things happened today. I got to get this place straightened out. But I want to say something to you, George. It weren't for you and Art. There's so much stuff I get done in the middle of the night. I keep the radio on. I keep you on. Thank God for Coast to Coast because I go nuts sometimes. And I really appreciate what you're doing. And this show, they should just, you know, they can waive every other bill to the big guy, but the little guy gets screwed.
Yep.
And I hope everybody that listens to Coast, you got 3 million listeners or whatever it is, writes a congressman and says, this has to stop, this extortion by the government for student loans, for fly-by-night schools that don't give people jobs and everything else. It's criminal.
All right, that's the guy from Pittsburgh.
Amen, brother.
He's got his own YouTube channel out there. He's pretty entrepreneurial. He sure is. So it's obvious, and Tom was telling me as he, you know, takes the calls and puts people on hold for me. He says some of these calls are nightmare stories. This is sad stuff, Alan.
Oh, you know, we've had people. I mean, I can't even. I don't even know where to start. I mean, we've had people commit. We've documented 3 suicides at this point.
Oh my God! Over student debt.
Over student debt, and it's just so painful and sad. You know, families ripped apart because parents who co-signed on their son's loans, and you know, the family nest egg went to Sallie Mae, and you know, people literally fleeing the country. And they're afraid to come back now for fear of being hounded by not only the private collection firms, but also the federal government. And this is something I haven't mentioned, but, you know, the federal government can garnish your Social Security when you're old. They can garnish your disability. They can actually get you fired from public employment. And they can even prevent you from getting a driver's license as a result of your student loans. And so now this recent story about the first arrest in Texas, which is bound to explode to tens of thousands more, it's really kind of a dystopian deal, and it bums me out from time to time. But I try to keep a stiff upper lip and fight the good fight.
You have to keep fighting the good fight, Alan. Give your website out again for folks, would you please?
Sure, studentloanjustice.org, and that's it, studentloanjustice.org.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment with Alan Collins and take final phone calls here. His book is called The Student Loan Scam. Next hour, we will dabble a little bit in the world of the paranormal. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Do follow us on Twitter. Send me an email whenever you want to george@coasttocoastam.com. And we shall be right back to take the rest of your calls. So those of you on hold, don't lose your place in line by hanging up. We'll be back. Okay, for those Coast Insiders, and you can still join, by the way, it's 15 cents a day. That is it. It's a great deal. You just go to coasttocoastam.com to sign up. But my colleague Dave Schrader will be our guest chatter tomorrow, and it's going to be moved up an hour. First time ever moved up an hour because David's got his own radio show in Minneapolis. 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So jump on board, if you would, Coast Insiders, for our guest chat with Dave Schrader. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Alan Collins. And we're going to take final calls here. And Alan, great work, by the way, since you've been doing this. What's the reaction been to the book, The Student Loan Scam?
Well, it's been great. We got a couple of awards for it, and I think CNN Money Magazine named me one of 7 financial heroes for 2009, I believe. I was up there with Warren Buffett and a couple other famous people like that. It was pretty fun. But more than anything, it has, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes to the problem. And, you know, the research that I did for the book wound up being the basis of a 60 Minutes episode, top story, and Sallie Mae, believe it or not, refused to show up for the piece. And as a result of that, Elliot Spitzer, he's a little not too popular these days, but when he was Attorney General of the State of New York, he started an investigation that Andrew Cuomo finished as a result of that piece. And, you know, financial aid officers across the nation were fired, including Columbia University and University of Pennsylvania, some very, very prestigious universities, for taking, it turned out they were taking illegal kickbacks from the lending company.
Oh, geez.
And so, you know, I'm happy that, you know, we have at least one piece of legislation to point to. And that is Senator Ted Kennedy's last piece of higher education legislation, the Student Loan Sunshine Act, was passed as a result of those investigations. And so we claim a little bit of credit for that, and it's endeared us well.
Okay, let's go to the final calls. You ready? Go to
let's
David, truck driving in Tennessee. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi,
Hi Alan.
Hey, David.
Great show tonight. Thank you. I did have, I guess, more of a comment than a question as far as it goes. I noticed a lot by Sunderland College. I've been through it. I couldn't go to college what I wanted to go to college for, to afford it. But the bottom line is people have to live while they're in college, too. And I think that's where a sum of the money, not all of it, winds up going.
That's true. Living expenses.
Yeah. They have to have a car to get school, they have to have a place to live, they got to eat, and that winds up because you got to live. So, I mean, you know, I let my son stay at home while he's getting his chemistry degree, and he's only getting out with like maybe a couple of $1,000 in debt. But I saw what was happening. I read the fine print. And on the other side, what I also learned in this process is that the schools lie so badly. They will tell you, for example, they tried to get me to go back to school to be an accountant. And they said, oh, the government will pay you $17, $20 an hour to be an accountant for them. And the truth is, when you go to actually look at real jobs in the real marketplace, oh, yeah, it'll pay you $10, $11 an hour. And even at those rates, just a few years ago, those were low wages. So a lot of it has to do also with what the employers are willing to pay. And right now, with all this surplus of college-educated people that we have, we're going to be looking at a situation where either work for what we're paying or starve to death and die, basically. I mean, you know, you have to live somehow. So a lot of people out of despotism will just go to work for a really substandard wage for what they're doing. You see what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. It's an absolute ball, and it can be a real ball and chain for people. You know, the amount of money that people are having to borrow on average today for college, it's about $35,000 for undergrad, which is just absolutely so much higher than it was 10 years ago.
What was it for me when I went to college in 68 to 72? I can't remember.
Very not much.
Not much.
Back in those days.
So those were those with those dollars,
you know,
though. Everything's
job during the summer and essentially pay for your tuition. I don't know how many thousands of percent the price of college has gone up since then, but it's been significant. I mean, there almost were no student loans, say 1970 or so. It was really about 75, 73, 74, 75. When the lending program really started to take off. And so, I mean, and just in the past 20 years, we've gone from roughly maybe not even $100 billion in student loans to, yeah, $1.5 trillion today. And so it's just astonishing. And where before, you know, previous generations could work over the summer and cover all their costs with no loans, today, that's just turned on its ear. And I might point out, by the way, you know, other countries, and not just socialist countries, but like countries like Germany, for example, just announced that they are making all of their colleges free. So no loans, no anything. And, you know, Russia, for example, college is free. And so, you know, free college used to happen in this country. It certainly could happen again in this country.
Isn't it free in Cuba?
I suspect it is. I don't know. I haven't looked at Cuba.
And then what about Saudi Arabia? Don't they pay for it?
Saudi Arabia, well, everybody's so rich in Saudi Arabia. I don't think they even need loans for college. I don't know, honestly. But I do know that, you know, Russia, it's free. Germany, they just announced it'll be free. And so, you know, it's not that big of a reach to be able to educate our population I mean, certainly, you know, public schools from K through 12 are free. Of course, the taxpayer pays, but at least point of sale, it's free. And you know, to stretch that an additional 4 years to provide a free undergraduate education to people who are able and wanting to go, I really don't think that's too big of a stretch. And, you know, obviously the colleges need to bring their costs down significantly. And so, you know, hopefully that will happen. I have some hope for, you know, for Hillary and Bernie and so forth. And they certainly need to put more work into their current platforms if they really want to make college free. But it certainly shouldn't be too big of a thing for the most powerful country in the world.
Well, don't give up on the Republican side either, Alan.
Well, no, absolutely not.
Just trying to balance this here.
You know, everybody agrees that having an educated population is a very good thing. And so where there's a will, there's a way. And I think everybody will eventually come around to that, especially in light of this massive swath of economic destruction that this current higher education financing model has caused. Certainly we can learn some hard lessons from that and come out the better for it.
Let's go to Stacy Skype in Stevenson Ranch, California. Hey, Stacy.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Good.
Well, I was just calling in. I work in default prevention for a proprietary college.
Ah, okay.
And when our students, before they start school, they meet with financial aid to help them plan, you know, what type of federal aid is going to be available to them and how it's going to offset the cost of education. And when they agree to receive those loans, they have to go through loan counseling through the Department of Ed. That's the Department of Ed's requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have to sign a master promissory note, which is the contract, and it lets them know what's expected of them and then what they can expect from the Department of Education. At our college, we also do, in their first classes, we do financial literacy, where we actually go into the classroom and we speak with them and say, you know, hey, these loans you're borrowing, you don't have to pay them now, but you will have to pay them later. And then we go over the consequences of if they don't make a payment. You go 270 days past due, your loan goes into default. You're 360 days past due, the loan servicer then sends that account to collections with the Department of Education, and you don't want that to happen because they do wage garnishments, they'll seize your tax returns, they'll take money out of your bank account, you know, unannounced, they'll sue you, they'll prevent you from getting your professional licenses like you were mentioning earlier. So there's a lot of negative consequences of not paying, and we explain that to them. But then at our school particularly, there's a team of us that we do delinquency outreach to those borrowers who have missed a payment, five payments, seven payments, whatever it takes. We track them all the way through day 60 and do everything we can to find them and to help them to educate that they have a lot of options. Default is really, it's so sad when a borrower defaults now, because there are so many great income-based repayment plans out there that borrowers can qualify for that set their payments based on their income and their household size. There's no reason for them to default, because most of them are going to qualify for a payment of $50 or less, just going out there and working in their field of study or not being in their field of study. But then if they can't manage their payments, they can request a deferment, which temporarily puts the loan on hold for up to 6 months, or they can request a forbearance that will put their loan on hold for 12 months. And in some of those options, there's even assistance with the way the interest accrues on the loan. And with income-based payment plans, they offer the potential for loan forgiveness if they meet certain requirements. And so my job every single day is calling people and saying, hey, I'm not sure if you're aware, but these options exist to you, to try and keep that default rate lower. Because from the school's perspective, students are not allowed to have a school's not allowed to have a default rate that exceeds 30%.
What is your reaction, Stacy, to what you're hearing from Alan right now?
He makes some very valid points. I feel that some some of the examples that are being given are extreme. Yes, they will. They can come to your door. The story that he was talking about, I heard on the news, the gentleman where they, you know, he owed $1,500 in student loans. It ends up becoming over $5,000 with interest accrual and penalties and all that stuff. Yes, that's going to happen. That's because the borrower didn't do the minimal things to keep themselves out of default. But the part of the story that I don't think is being conveyed is when they came to the door because he told them that he wasn't going to come, they were going to have to come get him. He was notified by the marshals that the judgment was issued and that he was going to have to appear in court for, you know, this particular issue. And when they came to the door after he said, you're going to have to come get me if you want me, he showed up at the door and the gentleman...
Still with us? Ah, we lost her.
Well, she said a mouthful. I'd like to comment quickly on a couple things. She was alluding to the actual situation with Mr. Aker in Texas the other day. When the federal marshals came to his door, they were going to arrest him. There was no way they were not going to arrest
him. That's why they came. That's why they came.
That is why they came. And so the fact that he had a gun and he ran inside or anything after that fact, it doesn't change the fact that they were there to arrest this man. And they are going to, and they have said, they have acknowledged that they have plans to arrest 1,500 people in the future, in the near future, just in the Houston area. And so that point is not with much
crazy.
Now, her earlier comments, couple things. She talked about all the information that they provide to the students and how they try and how these program, how these repayment programs exist. Number one, it just was reported in April that of all the people who have signed up for the income-based repayment program, which is a forgiveness program where if you pay a certain percentage of your salary over 25 years, eventually the loan's forgiven. It turns out that already, first of all, not one dime has been forgiven to one borrower yet from these programs. But it turned out in April, it was reported that 57% of the people who have already signed up for these programs have already been kicked out of these programs for failure to verify income. This is an annual process, this is a very onerous hoop that the borrowers have to jump through, and they make it very difficult. And already 57% of the people have been kicked out. Now, this is something that the federal government could easily verify independently through the IRS, through tax filings. But the fact that they don't, and the fact that they make it so hard for the borrowers, just proves the bad faith that the Department of Education is administering these loan programs with. Now, she also talks about how they work with their students after they graduate to keep them out of default. Well, I mean, that's because the schools can lose their eligibility, as she said, with a default rate above 30%. But, you know...
So that's bad for the school. Very bad, right?
Yeah, that's horrible. But, you know, the default rate that she's talking about is the cohort default rate. And this gets a little down in the weeds, but basically, the cohort rate that she's talking about only counts loans that default in the first 2 years after graduation. So they do follow their students up to 2 years after graduation because they don't want to get cut out of the money stream of the lending system. And so while maybe this does keep people out of default for a couple years, after that point, they're in the clear and they forget about these guys. And so they're really sort of kicking the can down the road. And finally, you know, it's great to provide information to students, but, you know, she didn't mention that they warn students that there are no bankruptcy protections because they probably don't.
Why don't they just, like, make it $5,000 a year to go to school? $5,000. That's it. Give them student loans. When they're all done, it's $20,000. They can pay that off over 20 years.
You know, that sounds pretty reasonable to me. you know, certainly if you look at the cost of college back in the 70s and you adjusted for inflation, that's probably in the neighborhood of where it would be.
Yeah.
That's
my
no problem with that.
That's my plan.
Maybe onto something.
Next up, let's go to Marianne in Kent, Washington. Good morning, Marianne.
Hey, Marianne. Hi there, George. I'm glad to get on.
Good. Not much time, but we got you on.
I know. I'll try to be fast.
Okay.
I have two friends, and I'm really wanting to know what in the heck is going on. One of them has just told me a few days ago that she's got loan forgiveness, and she's considered disabled because she has diabetes and some other problems. The other person is also disabled, another friend of mine. She's had cancer. She's a cancer survivor, and she's very, very ill with other problems. This other gal does not have loan forgiveness at all, and they are coming after her to garnish her disability check. Now, what I'd like to know is what in the heck is going on, and why are there such disparities in the way that disabled people are being treated?
That's an absolutely great question. Here's the answer. The Department of Education requires total and permanent disability in order to grant forgiveness of a student loan. And what is really ruthless, the Department of Education will hire its own doctors to second-guess determinations made by the Social Security Administration. So you may be designated disabled for health reasons by Social Security Administration, et cetera, but the Department of Education will often come in, employ their own doctors who go, oh, we actually don't think they're disabled. Sure, she may be in a wheelchair, but you know, she can walk and or she can talk and type, and so we're going to only give her a 80% disability or whatever the formula might be. And so, based on that, the Department of Education gets out of having to forgive the loans. And, you know, make no mistake, Department of Education was set up to run like a business. They are out to make a buck. They may be a government entity, but they have essentially jettisoned their public interest purpose a long time ago. They are looking out for the institution.
Well, I got to tell you, Alan, the information is amazing. Thank you so much. The student loan scam up next. A little bit of parapsychology on Coast to Coast AM.